the World, a fictional adventure told in 100 episodes. Episode 42, Center Life. Girl formerly known as Jennifer Dash, now known as Naime, didn't sleep the night of the leprechaun ceremony. Entranced by the whole ordeal and the mysterious shadow bunnies, Naime and Fimafang, formerly called Bitters, wandered about the various groves of the center trying to gesticulate with their arms some sort of understanding of what they just saw. All the while, they nursed down their tea. Somewhere before dawn, they perched below the long limbs of a particularly large tree and blathered on about their lives. When Fimafang and Naime departed, meandering about the grounds in separate directions, Jen realized that although they spent hours together, often bearing their souls to one another, Jen didn't feel particularly close to Fimafang. He was just another character in this place, no better or worse than any other soul traipsing about the druidry. In that thought, that blithe recollection of relativity, days floated by. Jen Dash, now spoken of as Naime, slept in a large ceilingless room with levels upon levels of hammocks. Hers in particular was at mid-height, meaning she had two hammocks above her as well as two below. One might surmise that it's better to be in the center of a hammock bunk when it snows or rains, but one would be wrong. This winter continued to be uncommonly mild, and sleet seemed to be the most common form of nightly mischief. Pools of freezing water would aggregate at the base of the hammock just above Jen, before splashing down on her wholesale. It was unpleasant. Unpleasant, but the constant warmth of the local variety of tea kept Jen at least bearably warm from the inside out. Her insides were constantly bubbling with such warmth that the outside freezing cold didn't bother her. The process of going from temporary level 1 member of the center to an official level 1 extraordinaire was pretty simple. Go to a handful more meetings in the AA-like room, the meetings now led by Adela, the googled and spectacled man who spoke for Mama Beck. Except, after that first temp meeting, Mama Beck didn't stick around much. Adela repeated himself often that he spoke for Mama Beck, that he transcribed her thoughts for the masses. The group waiting to be initiated into the company of permanent level 1s was smaller than the temp group Jen, or should I say Naime, joined on day 1. What happened to the others? What happened to them? What happened to them? Naime found it strange that these people, these little looky-loos, would watch the gobstoppingly incredible leprechaun night and choose after to go back to their normal, commonplace lives. Why would they do that? And just as strangely, why would the center be comfortable with them leaving? Wouldn't they go back to their homes and tell their friends and families about this international oddity? Wouldn't the press come buzzing around? Hungry journalists looking for their big break, waiting to capture the truth about the tree-loving ancient Irish cult? The fact that there weren't gossip predators floating about was slightly alarming. After a few days, Adela scheduled sacred walks for Fimafang and everyone else in the circle. Naime was finally assigned a sacred walk time last of all. She found this a little confounding, too. But then again, she was a latecomer on the day of the leprechaun rituals, so maybe it was all natural to be scheduled dead last. When Fimafang, aka Bitters, got official level 1 status, Naime asked him what his sacred walk was like. It was fine, he said. Just fine? Naime asked. Yeah, I guess I expected more. I got the job of chopping down trees. Chopping down trees? They do that here? Fimafang raised his foot off the ground, showcasing the mulch sticking to the bottom of his heel. Where do you think this comes from? Oh, so did Adela ask you any questions? No, I don't think so. I'm not sure, actually. Maybe. Yeah, I think there was a question or two. I can't really remember all that well. It's kind of foggy. Don't you think that's a little weird? A little spark of old Jen the Questioner jumped off the page, submissioning the new girl Naime to her thoughts momentarily. Everything's a little weird here. I think that's part of the deal. Oh, that makes sense, Naime said. There's too much to take in. We're like infants here. Yeah, I guess. On the day that Adela and Naime were scheduled to take a walk, Jen's casted hand was hurting horribly. The pain, an overall burning that would start at the base of her wrist and flame up into her skin all over, had been slowly getting worse day by day. The reason was easy enough to surmise. She'd missed multiple appointments with her doctor in Zurich. Her cast was getting filthy. She'd gotten it wet. She'd been given no medical anesthetic. It was quite foreseeable now to imagine that her whole arm was rotting off. As a means of nourishment and somehow as a fairly effective, apparently natural pain reliever, the girl Naime sipped and sipped and sipped and sipped her aromatic homebrewed tea. "Hello, Naime," Adela said to her when they first met. "Hi, are we going on our sacred walk now?" "It is that time, yes." They walked out maybe 15 minutes away from the main building, past the amphitheater where Jen / Naime watched the leprechaun depart from this realm, past various teepees and gardens and chicken coops. They found themselves traipsing calmly under the shadows of a natural dirt path with branching trees spindling to and fro on either side.
"This is your day, Naime.
Your day,"
says Mama Beck.
Adela spoke. "What do I have to do to become a true level one?" Naime said.
"Is that all you want? To become a level one?"
"I want to be a level one, and then a level two, and then a level three."
"You'd like to live here forever?"
The question took her by storm. She hadn't thought much about time while being here at the center. The 72 hours at the interrogation place flashed in her mind. If this was her choice, to live years in small windowless rooms, or here out in the open, out in nature, then the choice was easy. "I guess I do. Although," Naime scratched at her cast, "I have these pains. This cast hurts."
"Don't fear.
Your pain will soon depart from you.
Tell me. Do you remember why you came here?"
Adela asked non-confrontationally.
"I want to solve the world." "Do you know how many people come here wanting to do just that?"
No, Naime said, ready to be surprised by whatever answer was to be given.
"None. You're the first."
Naime smiled. It was good to be a one and only.
"That's what makes you special. You see this tree?"
"Yes," Naime said, staring at the specimen in front of them. A deeply green tree with a dagger cursedly jammed into it at shoulder height level. From the dagger, a trail of dark red sap, much thinner than Jen would normally guess sap should be, drained down to a basin at the foot of the tree. Adela pulled what looked like a wooden spoon spatula from his back pocket. He dipped it into the red sap, grabbed Jen's casted arm, and generously splotched the stuff onto the cast. He dipped the spatula 3 times into the red sap lake to get an adequate amount of the stuff onto the cast. Naime stood in wonder. What would happen next? The center was the best place in the world for asking that question. For every time you anticipated something to happen, it seemed that the very opposite circumstance came to occur. Adela placed the red-sapped wooden spatula back in his back pocket, and the couple returned to their traipsing about in the grove. Naime figured she'd let the red sap do whatever it was going to do. She contented herself with not dwelling on it.
"There's a reason you're here, Naime. A very important reason."
"Yes?"
"Yes. But we're none of us confident yet on what that reason is. Not me, not Mama Beck, not anyone."
Naime ventured to ask, "What about Vater Beck?"
"He may know, but he hasn't spoken of it yet."
"Could we ask him?"
"No, he is not one to ask questions to. If he wants to speak to you, you'll know."
"He's magic, isn't he?" Naime said playfully after finishing her cup of tea, crumpling up the styrofoam and smashing it into her pocket.
"He's just like you or me, only more in tune with the universe. Naime, Do you know why Mama Beck gave you that name? No? It means, literally, no name. Can you guess why she gave that name to you? No? Because she doesn't want you to be noticed by a certain someone. Who? Even in Jennifer's drug-addled brain, the numbered man came to mind. And then, briefly, Merkel. Jennifer Dash, the real Jennifer Dash, conscious mind already locked away under a thick layer of ever-thickening haze, knew that Merkel was a man she wished to never see again. Someone she'd never wanted to be noticed by ever, ever again. Mama Beck didn't say exactly, but I think she must be referring to the one we don't speak of here. Who's that? We don't speak of him. If we did, then, well, we'd tell you who he is. Oh, please, 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 Adela. Naima reached out to grab Adela as a token of affection, but she did so with her casted arm. She saw now that the sap had completely hardened onto the cast. Adela then grabbed Naima's cast. It looks ready. He marched over to the nearest tree. Swing it at the tree. Go on. It won't hurt. Naima swung her cast at the tree. It hit with a thud, and then a crack, like an earthquake, sprawled up and through the cast. Adela took the cast in his hands and peeled it off like an egg, to reveal a Frankensteinian hand. Naima gasped. It was ugly. It still hurt. She could move the digit slightly, but God almighty, was it ugly. Jennifer was a darker-skinned, very naturally tanned girl. This hand was not her shade at all. It must have come from a Swedish or Finnish or Norwegian girl. It was so pale in tone as to be almost completely devoid of color altogether. Who had offered their hand in Zurich, an albino? Adela dropped the empty cast down like a piece of litter. Catching Jen's concern, he said, Oh, don't worry. These woods are very hungry. They'll eat that cast with its amber right up. Oh, Naima said. Okay. Mama Beck says that she sees two paths in front of you. Either you will rise and be the center's brightest star, conquering our primitive system of levels faster than anyone thought possible, or you'll turn sour. You'll use what you've learned here against us. You'll seek out the other side. What's the other side? It's the side that the one we don't speak of is on. For some reason, maybe it was that she'd not had a sip of tea for a full 2 minutes now, or perhaps due to the shock of seeing this albino appendage attached to her arm, Jennifer Dash's mind was working properly. Her memory banks were stirring. She remembered Mrs. Moose and her precious words to Jennifer. The old cartoonist believed that all of life, all of history, was a flaming hot war between two rival factions, order and entropy. And according to Mrs. Moose, the only way for there to be peace, both sides must be held in each hand. No side should win. Maybe. Jen needed to be careful with her words. She'd state her reservation in the form of a question. Questions usually came off as less argumentative. How do you know that the center is on the right side? How do you know you don't have everything reversed? Or maybe what's right is for neither side to win. Jen got a little carried away there. Those are fair questions and wanderings. You're still young and innocent, and you haven't come into the greater knowledge yet. Once you have access to the limitless depths that Mama Beck and Father Beck do, you'll know for yourself. There's a right side and a wrong side. Adela took Naima's hand in his, her albino-y hand. Evil is a real thing. Come. We're almost there. The rows of trees were coming to an end. A large brick wall presented itself in front of them. A clumsily looking wooden ladder lay leaning against the wall. Come, climb this ladder. Naima climbed the ladder, now fully focused on the now, invested only in the minutiae of the moment. She didn't take time to reflect on how this ladder was similar, or dissimilar, to the one on that Edenic island Jen and Lex stumbled upon after the horror of Pishtaco's island. On top of the wall, Jen had a perfect view of what lay beyond. Suddenly, Naima got a bad case of vertigo and found it necessary to crumple down and hold onto the wall for safety. For on the other side of the wall was a large, round hole. On all sides of the hole, a dozen or more large ropes extended out. Following the ropes with her eyes, Naime saw that all the ropes were tied around various trees surrounding the hole. The pit itself was dark and black. Naime couldn't see the bottom of it. Adela pushed himself up onto the wall after Jen.
"This is our trench, our great hole."
"Why is it here?" Naime asked.
"We take all of our level 1 initiates here. Do you know how deep it goes?"
"No, I can't see the bottom."
"Of course you can't. What if I told you it was endless?"
"What?"
"What would you think if I told you that?"
I'd think that was impossible."
"Why would you think it was impossible?"
Because it's just not possible."
"What if I told you that if I pushed you..."
Adela opened his hands, gesturing violently. Was he about to push her in? Was that why he brought her here? Was this where the druidry took applicants who failed their tests? Did Jen fail?
"Down the hole. What do you think would happen?"
"I'd die," Naime said stoically.
"Why would you die?"
"I'd hit the bottom and that would kill me."
Adela extended his hands to embrace Naime around the waist. He was hugging her. At least now, if they were going to fall, they were going to fall together.
This calmed Naime.
"There are so many true facts about this world that the common man or woman just can't accept. This pit is one of them. I'll tell you what would happen if I pushed you. You'd fall, of course. You'd fall straight through the earth, and you'd come out on the other side. Gravity on the other end would slow you down, so you'd come up just right at ground level."
"Where?"
"Well, at the other side of the Earth. The world is a sphere, after all.
Well, slightly ovaled."
"Oh, Naime, you are to be one of our chief rubies here at the center. We are excited for you. You are now a level 1. Hear me closely. You have a job to do. It takes a lot of work to keep the center going, and so we all must do our part.
Mama Beck has given you the job of mulcher. You will work 5 hours a day from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. in the mulcher department."
"What's that?"
"You'll grind up trees for our feet."
"Oh,
but that's not the fun part.
Are you ready for the fun part?"
"Okay," Naime said as she gazed once more into the endless pit just beyond her feet.
"You've been given a position. A destiny, some would call it. And that destiny is... drumroll, please. Tall."
"Huh?"
"Your position, your destiny, is tall."
"I don't understand."
"New level ones never understand when they're given their destinies.
You'll see in time.
It'll come to you.
Your position will assert itself
within you."
The two slowly made their way, then back down the ladder, through the sacred grove, and back to the main center. Naime was quick to hustle over towards the tea jug. She was parched, and had gone 15 minutes without a sip. At this moment, while Jen was returning to her tea, someone was reading her copy of 50 People Whom I Pity by DTS. It read... Number 49, Anton LaVey. It is only right for the penultimate pitiful one to be the father of modern Satanism. My problem with Anton LaVey is probably not what you suspect. So what, the guy invented a religion celebrating the inverse of the god and the stuff that most normal people worship. No biggie. Good on him if it gets him anywhere. The problem is, of course, that these spurious made-up religions never actually lead to anything new. Rather ironically, the Church of Satan has a list of 9 satanic sins. On that list are notions like stupidity, pretentiousness, self-deceit, lack of perspective, and counterproductive pride. Anton LaVey, most assuredly, my friends, is guilty in no small amount of every single one of these sins. Not unlike televangelist Sir Charles Manson, Anton LaVey's whole success in life was built on the foundation of Anton LaVey's cult of personality. Translation, he's a huckster. His religion gets you nowhere. You want to join the dark side? Be a Darth Vader? Fine. Darth Vader could actually strangle people with his thoughts. That's power. What power does the Church of Satan have? None. They die, just like all the rest of us. They have no power over this earth, no freedom from the general sweat and toil of existence. Add to that, Anton LaVey wasn't very good at life. He was a domestic abuser, a drug abuser, and he screwed up every one of his children. By what measure, any measure, could that be considered success? If you want to thumb your nose at God, or you want to rattle people's cages, fine, but don't act like you're actually accomplishing anything of significance. Why add lying to your bevy of impurities? Remember, rebellion, no matter how noble, is always reactionary and therefore has no creative power. Rebellion can only ever be destructive, and no matter what anyone else tells you, destruction is the antithesis of creation. I shouldn't have to tell you this. The reader of this little book placed it down on a coffee table and considered the author's point. Jennifer Dash should have left the Druidry Center the day they got the leprechaun to the parking lot. She never should have withstood the controller's 72-hour harassment. Once she had some awareness that the sugar rose tea was some sort of opiate, she should have left. She should have left when she saw the shadowy bunny ears. And above all, she should have left when she witnessed the demise of the leprechaun. The goat that at first you thought was levitating is suspended in the air by 6 ropes. 4 ropes around each leg, 1 around the neck, and 1 holstering the entire goat up, down the middle of the goat's underside. The leprechaun isn't crouching on the limb of the tree like you suspected either. He's also held in place, suspended if you will, by a rope. There's just 1 rope, as far as you can tell, around the leprechaun's waist. Drums. From where? You can't see any. They are deep, hollow, and menacing. The sound of monks chanting. A strong wind. Something's about to go down. You think you can see, you're not sure, but you think the leprechaun is grinning. Or is he grimacing? A yell.
The sacrifice!
A man's yell. Who? Deep, throatal. Like someone kicked up the bass 12 notches. Could it be Fodderbeck? You hear cheers from the crowd in unison. Only to realize that a loud shout is bursting forth from your own lungs. Why are you shouting? The drums. Again, the voice.
The sacrifice! Now!
The ropes must have had metal blades on them. Someone tightened them. The goat fell to pieces. Blood splattered onto the pinned leprechaun. Pieces of his limbs swung idly at the end of the ropes. The crowd goes wild. Fimafang beats his hands on his chest like an ape, hollering with righteous glee at the night wind. The leprechaun, was this what he wanted? Was he grinning or grimacing? The goat was gone, torn to harrowing bits by the ropes.
Lower!
The scary voice shouted. A cauldron came into view. It was being lowered from amidst the top of the tree. You think it's a cauldron, a deep, black cauldron, until you realize what's in it. Now Mama Beck is standing up on the stump. She pulls out thick gloves from a purse she has, raises the gloves up to the crowd. More cheers and jeers. She slips the gloves onto each finger. The black cauldron's no cauldron at all. It's a pot. A black pot of gold. It hangs there just a few feet off the ground. Mama Beck leans in over. With her gloved hands, she pulls out a round gold coin. You don't know how you know, but you do. The coins are smolderingly hot. With the gold coin, Mama Beck makes her way to the little man. Then she does the horrible thing. She uses the coin to literally burn the heart out of the leprechaun. He screams. You watch. You can smell it. You can smell his skin melting. The crowd roars. Before it's over, Mama Beck, upon instruction from the voice that you still assume is Father Beck, melts the worthless creature's tongue out as well as his eyes. The gold coins, like a warm knife through butter, cut their way through the leprechaun's eyes into his sad, skinny sack brain. How Naime didn't leave the center after witnessing that atrocity, Jennifer Dash will never know. Solve the World is produced by me, Dante Stack. Appropriate attribution for all the music and sound effects can be found on our website show notes page at dantestack.com. Guys, I'm putting a lot of effort these days into our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/solvetheworldpodcast. I post every day and I have a focus on the visual elements. So you should totally go there to be more involved and more thrust into the visual universe of Solve the World. I also have generated a meme page on our website that I'm constantly using to put memes on the Facebook page for you to share. Hopefully this can be an avenue that we can help spread the word of Solve the World via these visual cues in social media. So, if you haven't already, join our Facebook page and check out our meme page at dantestack.com. Thanks! Adam and Eve were kicked out of the Garden of Eden after tasting of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Jen has found her fruit and decided, for good or for ill, that in order to solve the world, she'll have to eat whole that forbidden fruit. Next time, Jen rises through the ranks and looks to this enchanted realm to fix her troubled hand. That and more on Solve the World.